I'm your average action movie survivor. When I'm not busy trying to avoid massive superhero battles with people getting thrown through walls or dodging giant robots about to step on me, I'm listening to the Part-Time Fanboy podcast. Be sure to check out Part-Time Fanboy at parttimefanboy.com for somewhat weekly podcasts and reviews about various fanboy-related subjects. Also, be sure to like them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. Do it now, because the Robopocalypse is coming!
Part-Time Fanboy.
Than a locomotive.
I'm here doing part time. Parttimefanboy.com.
Well, this is Part Time Fanboy, and I am Christian Horn, and I am on the line with Nick Marino, who is the creator of the book called Holy Fuck. There's just no other way to say it.
That's the name of it. Wait, but it's co-creator.
Co-creator. Okay, yeah, that's right. Co-creator. Who is your creator that you co-created it with? The artist?
Yeah, my collaborator is Daniel Arutamasa.
Okay, Daniel Arutamasa. Okay, great. That's good to know, because I was misinformed in my own way. I thought you were the creator and then he was just the artist. So
I think if I was Stan Lee, I would probably claim that I created it, because Stan's theory, and I understand where he's coming from, his perspective is, if you were the person that had the original idea, that the genesis idea, if you will, in the context of Holy Fuck, then you are the creator.
Gotcha. Right.
Anybody else that works with you is building off your idea. However, I disagree with that. My feeling is it's not just about having the original spark. It's about how that spark has life is breathed into that spark.
Yeah.
And I did not breathe life into this idea. I had a very basic idea. And then when I connected with Daniel, who was interested in the very basic idea, he breathed visual life into it. And I was inspired to breathe, writing life. I don't know what the word is.
Well, you are the writer, and your collaborator is the artist, pretty much.
Yeah, basically, he doesn't pencil and ink, he draws digitally. So,
gotcha.
He's the layout, he does layout and breakdowns, breakdowns and finishes. If you're an old school comic book person,
you know
the way that those works, but basically. He does thumbnails, and then he basically inks his thumbnails, but it's all digitally.
Gotcha.
So, you know,
gotcha.
And then he colors it, and then we both letter it together.
Oh, gotcha. Oh, wow. That's really cool. What you would call it? So I got a lot of questions for you because, first of all, I love this book. I thought it was hysterical.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
Another friend of mine read my copy and he's like, this is genius. And he's like, this is fantastic. And I also, there's a sequel now, right? Called Holy Fucked.
Yeah, we toss an ED on the end and boom. Yeah.
And there's only the first issue of that is out? Or did the second issue come out?
Well, it depends when this episode's coming out. The second issue is going to be in stores on October 14th. So from when we're talking, basically, about a week from now.
Yeah, oh, okay. So this is, and this will go up next week. So this will come out when your book is coming out on the day of the Wednesday.
Okay, cool.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So there you go.
Good to know. Yeah. Oh, that's fantastic. So I guess the big thing is because how do you come up with an idea? Like, first of all, the title, Holy Fuck. Because for me, that's like, there are definitely people in this industry who would be like, dude, you can't sell a book with that name. Like, how are you going to, I guess, let's go back. Like, how did you come up with the original genesis? Like, what was the first idea spark? How did you get it? Like, how did it come to you? Because it's a pretty crazy book. Like, you know, it's not like, your average run-of-the-mill superhero story. So no, what how did the Thunderbolt like hit your brain for this?
Well, I love B movies, and I love how there's just that X factor that's off in B movies. It's hard to identify because not every B movie does it the same way.
Yeah.
But there's just a little something that's like something was sort of underdone or overthought, or the ambition was beyond the, I don't know.
Yeah,
it's an interesting combination. So that was one aspect of my influence. I wanted to do something that was very much in the B movie vein, but kind of put it into a comic book. I guess some people would argue that all comic books are B movies by comparison.
Yeah.
Because that's how some people feel. But I wanted to do something that was very that celebrated the fact that something can be a little bit off. You know, not every day. It can have rough edges, if you will, right?
Gotcha.
And I'm fascinated by the way that Hollywood misinterprets and overworks source material.
Sure.
You know, when they make a Spider-Man costume, it's like it has to be like this intricate weave thing, or it's it's just, they just misunderstand like everything about what makes the character, and they still come out with their own version of it, but it doesn't change the fact that they still kind of like fucked it up, right? So I was like, what's the most popular source material out there? They're always saying the Bible is the number one selling book in the world. And so I'm like, well, Hollywood thinks number one selling book, they see green. So what if Hollywood made this, you know, really like cash grab, complete misinterpretation of the source material as a sequel to try and make money, which is, would have been the Bible too.
That's awesome.
So I was podcasting back on a network I used to run called the Audio Shocker.
Yeah.
And Daniel heard the episode, and I was talking about this comic book I never thought I would make. I came up with this idea maybe 5-6 years ago.
Yeah.
And I'm just not enough of an artist to draw it myself.
Uh-huh.
And Daniel heard the episode, me talking about the idea, and he was like, I'd draw that. That was his comment that he left in our comment section. And I was like, I'm never going to find this ever again. Somebody wants to draw this book called The Bible 2, where like Hollywood misinterprets, you know, the source material, and Jesus is like sexy macho action hero. Yeah. I was like, I got to go for this.
Yeah, yeah.
So I emailed him, and we just started working on the book, and that was kind of it. But this is where co-creator comes from, and this is where the idea really becomes what you see as our final product. I said to him, look, I don't want this to be something like where I'm just telling you my idea for this and you draw it. I want us to rebuild this entire plot together. I want this to be something you are 100% completely invested in, enthusiastic about, passionate about, the way I am.
Yeah, yeah.
So we rebuilt the idea together, and we kept the skeleton, but we sort of, you know, we put the muscle and the skin and all that other stuff on there together. And in the process of it, because I had the idea so long ago for the story, somebody else used the name The Bible too.
Oh, really?
For a comic book.
Really?
Yes.
Have you read that one? Or?
I have not. I'm only familiar with it. He self-published, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
And it was very different from what we ended up doing.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when we're about halfway done with it, we realized this guy came out with his book. We were drawing this, well, dang, we not we. Daniel was drawing this in 2013, and the guy had just put out his collected edition in maybe, I want to say, the end of 2012 or something like that. And I hadn't thought to look it up, you know, and see. Anyway, point is, time came when we're getting ready to pitch this, which would have been right around the beginning of 2014. And we were like, we got to come up with a different name that's really our own thing. You know, it's not like, I'm sure we could use the Bible too. I doubt it was trademarked or anything, but I'd rather make it our own. You know, and we just had a giant list of names, and eventually we landed on Holy Fuck. Now, we put the asterisks in it because we thought it would be tough to sell if the word fuck wasn't censored.
Yeah.
But you know what? I don't know how much of a difference that would have made, honestly.
Well, I don't, like, when you came up, because the thing is like, so we met at Long Beach Comic Con when I had a booth for like this comic that I'm working on with a friend called Baby Badass. And
we had a pretty interesting way of meeting and hanging
yeah,
out.
Yeah. Like we met during the setup, and I walked over to you because I had seen a lot of the Action Lab publicity because I've interviewed some of those guys and I've reviewed a couple of their books. And, you know, I just went over to say hi because I'd always been curious about your book and I just never read it. And then we just started talking and yeah. And it was like, I don't know. It's like, I think I said something like, is there any place around here to eat? Cause you live in Long Beach and,
right.
And you were like, yeah, let's go get something to eat or something. And then we ended up just like hanging out like that night. And, you know, I met your
fiance.
Well,
yeah, I made you go on like a family dinner with me.
Yeah.
Cause I called up my fiance, Justique, and I was like, hey, yeah. I didn't even ask you. I just texted her.
No,
I was like,
you
hey,
asked.
Can I come to dinner?
And I was like, yeah, sure. I got nothing going on, you know, cause there was nothing going on that night. So
that
yeah.
was a good restaurant we went to. I enjoyed
it. It was. Do you remember the name? I don't remember what it was
I
called.
I don't know.
It was a Thai restaurant, but,
so many around here.
I just remember, but yeah, we just like hit it off and like hung yeah. out. And you know, I bought your trade the next day as soon as I showed
Thank
up
you.
And of course, and I read it after the convention and I just think like the thing is the way that you approach things is very different than the way that I approach things. I mean, you've been making okay. comics for a long time, right?
I don't know. What's a long time?
Well, you told me. You showed me some pictures of you at conventions. Like, you yeah. know, you had your own. Like, were you doing zines or like actual?
Yes.
Like, yeah, you were doing zines. And were you drawing them and writing them?
Yeah,
your own thing?
I've been a cartoonist my entire life. A very lazy one, but a cartoonist my entire life. Yeah. You know how it is. You're an artist.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not saying you're lazy. I'm just saying you know how it is.
I can be lazy. Yeah.
And I'm sure you've been drawing your whole life.
Yeah.
I would imagine, right?
Yeah. Oh, sure.
Yeah, definitely. And I've been making zines since I was in high school, which was in the 90s.
For okay.
me, late 90s. And I just kind of never really stopped making zines. I just didn't do them that frequently. But when I started working digitally, that sort of re-sparked my interest in making comics, which is something I'd always done, but not very, you know, not very dedicated. And Pittsburgh, where I was living at the time, had a very vibrant independent comics, in particular mini comics scene.
Oh, wow.
And there were a lot of guys who hadn't quite broken out yet, who now have broken out big time, like Ed Pisker and Jim Rugg and Tom Scholey.
Uh-huh. Oh,
who've
wow.
gone on to some pretty big projects. And this was maybe in the late zeros.
Yeah.
And I learned a lot from kind of studying where they were at the time, which is kind of where I am now. Maybe they were a little bit beyond that, but which is, you know, you're starting to get published and stuff like that, but you're still understanding the business of comics because you spend so much time creating them, you know?
Yeah.
And so I kind of, you know, learned a little bit from what I was able to glean from, you know, talking to those guys and hearing them speak at events and stuff and how to make my own mini comics. So I took my web comics I just started making. I made them into mini comics and I took the mini comics and, you know, I started doing maybe slightly more professional mini comics.
Yeah, yeah.
And I took them to some conventions. And because I was a podcaster, I was able to go to New York Comic Con and be an exhibitor and other stuff like that. And, you know, I just kind of – I definitely didn't break in, that's for sure. I stepped on every rung of that ladder to make it to the place I'm at now.
Yeah, it's just really interesting because when I said, like, I think that you and I kind of – approach things a little differently. You definitely like, and that's the thing, like when I met you, and I was like, okay, this guy's got like, you've got gusto. You know what I mean? Like this guy is just going for it. Like he doesn't care. And I, as I get older and have become a little bit more trepidatious, I've always been sort of self-doubting, you know, it's very much like that artist thing, but like you come across like A, very confident, and B, like, just like, I'm just going to do this. You know what I mean? And I was like, I really like this guy. Like, you know, that's the vibe that I got from you. And for me, it's like, and like I said earlier in the podcast, I think if you were coming up with the book, the last thing you would call it is something with the F word in the middle of it. You know
no,
what I mean?
No, no, because but that's kind of why I wanted to do it. So I thought about a lot of bands who made a strong impression first. I don't know that I made a strong impression necessarily. So everything I say is with a grain of salt.
Yeah.
But I thought about bands like, you know, whose first album was a punk album. And then they went on and they did rock stuff and they played stadium shows and they did club shows. They did whatever the hell they wanted, right?
Yeah.
But they were like, they started with their edgiest shit. Like, I don't know if you're familiar with the history of the Beastie Boys. I don't know if they ever stopped doing their edgiest shit. But they started as like this weird, raw, hardcore punk band. And like, I thought about the Police, whose first album was kind of like a punk album.
Yeah.
And like, I'm a musician and I tend to think of all of the creative things I do in terms of music, just because that's sort of default where my brain goes to.
Sure.
And I was just, you know, I was inspired by that idea of what if my first project that I'm contacting retailers about, that I'm sending out to companies as a pitch, what if it is just this total middle finger type of comic?
Yeah.
You know, that's a first impression. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
Like if I'm coming out with some book that's like, you know, I know, you know what? I don't even want to say what else it could be, because I'm sure my previous projects to me were quote unquote going to be my first impression.
Yeah.
But this one was designed, holy fuck, was designed to be given away, in the sense that I didn't think we were going to make money off this. I didn't necessarily expect to end up with a huge publisher. The idea was, this is my foot in the door. And I thought, what if my foot in the door is just like a total, I don't know, I guess a middle finger is still the best thing, way I have to say it.
Yeah,
you know, it was kind of like, fuck the way you make comics. Fuck your standards. Fuck your, you know, this is what you can do and can't do. I'm just going to do what I would want to read and what I would want to read, at least at the time in my life when I was making it.
Yeah.
Was that kind of book.
Yeah. Well, and that's where you get my total respect, because
thank you very much.
With like, you know, Baby Badass, like with my co-creator, they were definitely, and it more happened after I had my daughter, where it was very much like, ooh, I don't know if we should do this, or ooh, I don't know, you know. And to Dave's credit, like there was definitely a lot of times where, you know, he just went back and was like, because it was my, there was part of it was my idea to just be like, let's just go all the way. Like, let's just make it violent and crazy. And then sort of like after you have a kid, your sort of your vision of the world kind of resets itself a little. Mm. And, you know, to Dave's credit, he was very much like kept going in that direction, you know.
Yeah.
And it's mostly his baby, you know, at this point, for lack of a better term. But I mean, that's the thing, is like that is the thing that I was like, okay, this guy's got a book called Holy Fuck. And then I met you and I was like, he's totally got this personality where he just, you exude confidence. And it was like,
well, thank you,
yeah, I'm just going to do this. But so, you know, before we delve further into the Nick Marino Admiration Society, what tell people what the book is about, because we haven't even talked about that.
Holy Fuck. I went to this panel at WonderCon earlier this year, and they said, always lead with your characters in your pitch. So okay. I'm still developing this, but I, you know, this is the way I try to do it. Holy Fuck is the story of a nun named Maria, who's very devout, and she's tested in her faith when she teams up with Jesus and Satan to stop this horde of mythological gods who want to be worshipped again by any means. These gods have a plan, which is, use the human means of accumulating prosperity, you know. So use business to get wealth. Use that wealth to purchase weapons. Use those weapons to wreck human society, thus forcing the human – and then save the humans from the wreckage, the remaining humans, thus forcing the humans to worship them again is their idea.
Yeah.
Maria's like, no, I don't want to worship my gods out of fear. I want to choose my gods based on love.
Yeah.
And that leads into Jesus and Satan being there, who are gods like Zeus and Isis, who are the leaders of this mythological horde. But Jesus and Satan aren't, they're not trying to dominate other people. They're kind of like, they're hedonistic in some ways, but they're very much about free choice and not imposing yourself on other people.
Yeah.
And they don't necessarily care about stopping these mythological gods, but they also don't have anything better to do. So they're like, yeah, I mean, you have a point, Maria. We'll help you out. And then on top of it, the icing is that you don't really know. I mean, you know a little bit more with our sequel, Holy Fucked, but you don't really know with Holy Fuck what the deal is. But it seems like Jesus and Satan maybe – they had like a little thing in the past, you know, like maybe they were banging.
Yeah.
And even though, as you can say, you know, as a reader, it's not, there isn't actually that much sex. There was no sex between the two of them. There isn't even that much romance between the two of them, and holy fuck, but
yeah,
you can tell that they're into each other.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's a really funny relationship. I mean, the whole thing from the beginning is, you know, because the nun, Maria, she's mm-hmm. looking for, you know, help in her quest, and then she finally finds Jesus. I think it's in Japan, right?
Yes,
and
yes.
He's like in that, a carry.
I might pronounce it wrong. He's in the Kabuchiko district, which is kind of like, yeah, look, standards for seedy depend on are relative to where you are, but that's yeah. considered, I think Tokyo is kind of like tough part of town.
Yeah, and he's in one of those karaoke places, right? Where it's
yeah, it's
like,
not like a karaoke bar. It's
yeah,
like
you rent a room.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah, and he's got, I don't know if they're two prostitutes or they're just two women,
okay,
but
that's,
he gets
that's
caught.
The thing. Daniel and I had a little, he's with two women who were going to be characters that showed up at the end for the final fight scene.
Yeah.
But Daniel and I had a bit of a disagreement, and he didn't want to use them anymore. And so I'm going to have to save them for a future project.
Well, either way, he's watching Tentacles.
The dragon analogs.
Oh, okay.
Because you know I'm saying Misty Knight and Colleen Wing.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Okay. So their names are Asia and Africa.
Uh-huh.
Black one's named Asia, and the Asian one is named Africa.
Okay.
And they're kind of just like these, you know, badass chicks. I don't know. There's no other way to say it.
Yeah.
And you
yeah.
don't get to see them, but they're like these kick-ass martial artists, whatever, but they're like Jesus's party buddies.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he's getting stoned and he's watching tentacle
smoking
porn.
Meth.
You
don't state it, but I did some research and I found out that in Japan, the sort of recreational drug of choice is meth.
Okay. So yeah, see, here we go. So he's smoking meth and he's with two naked ladies and he's watching tentacle porn,
yes.
Anime tentacle porn. And that from that moment on, you're just like, oh, okay. Like, yeah, this is the way this is going to go. And it's just like, it's hysterical from then on in. I mean, because so this is what I was wondering about the story. Is this character the reincarnation of Jesus Christ, or is it Jesus Christ? Because it seems like in the beginning of the story, he doesn't even realize himself that he might be.
Mm-hmm.
Or
I see.
That's a
cool perspective on it. I like that. I, as you can see from the book, I am not a wordy writer. I actually would rather let the pictures do most of it. And because of that, a lot of stuff just goes unexplained.
Yeah.
And I know I have my own personal answers for everything. But I also love stories where as the viewer, or the reader, or whatever, you know, as the audience, you're allowed to fill in the blanks.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't think there's a wrong answer to your question. I just have my own personal answer to that question.
Gotcha.
Which is that, yes, this is Jesus.
Yeah.
He's the Jesus. And the deal is that basically, you know, his thing is like he's just hanging out. He's just on Earth. He's trying to enjoy himself.
Yeah.
And at this particular stage in his life, when Maria finds him in the beginning of Holy Fuck, he's just like a hedonist. He's just, you know, if you figure you've been alive for slightly over 2,000 years, you've probably done close to everything there is to do.
Yeah.
You know, this guy's just trying to entertain himself, basically. And for him at this point in his life, that's what he's into.
And he's basically immortal. And she comes across him and then they go and find Satan. And from there, the hijinks ensue, which, you know, the book is absolutely hysterical. It's got like action in it and just some of the dialogue is, you know, and the moments are just like laugh out loud funny where you're just sitting there chuckling at it. It's a really solid book. But what's interesting to me is, and I made this comment at Long Beach when I was sitting with my friends, I was like, Did you ever read the George Perez Wonder Woman? Because you're an old school comic fan, right?
I am. But you know what? I've only read a couple issues of it. I haven't read like the full run.
Well, it's funny because you're the sort of basic plot of the first trade, at least, is
yeah.
sort of, and yours is like much different and much funnier than, you know, obviously the Wonder Woman book could ever be. But
yeah.
like the opening arc of George Perez's Wonder Woman is, you know, she comes to the United States, and Ares is basically trying to infiltrate the nuclear, you know, the military so he can launch
yeah.
nukes and basically create like the greatest war so that it will increase his power and people will worship
right.
him.
As I mean,
the
that's
God
it.
Of war
that's,
again.
That sounds like just like the plot, right?
Yeah,
there.
Yeah. And I was like, and I'm such a comic nerd that I was like, dude, this is like Wonder Woman, this is much more funny than Wonder Woman could ever be. And there's more characters involved. But, you know, I was just like, wow. And I was wondering if you remembered that at all or had ever read it.
I hadn't read that one. You know, what's funny is that it doesn't surprise me because that's where my head's at. Like, that's kind of the era of comics from which I tend to draw from a lot.
Yeah, that's why I was wondering. Yeah.
I mean, I'm relatively young for being into those comics. You know, I'm in my early 30s.
Yeah.
But that's still kind of, I cut my teeth on comics at a very young age. And I, when I went back to get a lot of back issues, I really dug into stuff from sort of like, you know, the 80s, the late 70s to the early 90s, I guess you could say.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that makes, I'm not surprised because I think that that's a very classic plot of that era. And that's the stuff that inspires me.
Sure.
I love a lot of those superhero comics from that time. But no, I never read that. It's also apparently, holy fuck, is very similar in some ways to this book that Liefeld did called The Goddessy, which I had also never read. I wasn't aware of.
Never even heard of that.
You know, it's basically Jesus versus Zeus. And it's like kind of like an action. It's not modernized necessarily, but, you know, the principles are the same, if you will. And it's got a lot of over the top action. So maybe, I guess, Holy Fuck is like sort of the bastard child of George Perez's Wonder Woman and Rob Liefeld's The Goddessy.
That's a good way to look at it. But so how much research did you do as far as like the deities that you were going to use that line up against to fight Jesus and Satan? Like, did
you? A lot. I do a lot of research for silly things that don't get stated in the book, that aren't, you know, because none of it is really, barely any characters are even explicitly named.
Yeah.
But yes, I did a shit ton of research because I enjoy that. So I did it.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't need to, but.
Yeah, no, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of like different like gods from different pantheons. And I mean, there's even some that I didn't even recognize where I was like, what's that from? Like, you know,
There's some that I forget that I discovered in research. I forget the name of the culture, but the Aboriginal or native, if you will, culture of New Zealand. There's one, he shows up in the fourth issue and he's like the one who has this line that's like, kill them in the fourth issue. And I remember researching the shit out of this guy, but I can't remember what his name is.
Yeah.
Or the culture he comes from. But yeah, I went and so what I did was I write, I like my scripts to be open. And I like to say to Daniel, you know, look, draw whatever you want. I'll change the dialogue. Cause that's what I letter is the dialogue. I say, I'll change the dialogue to match your art, but here's my suggestion for what we should do. And so with the gods, I went and I researched a ton of gods and I was like, you know, this might be a fun one to use. It was important to me. I wanted to feature gods from around the world. I wanted somebody to pick up this book who lived in any country and be like, oh my God, that's so weird. I can't believe they used that character.
Uh-huh.
You know, like I wouldn't have expected that.
Yeah.
You know, I don't necessarily know if that's happened, but I would still hope maybe it could happen in the future. So yeah, I did a shit ton of research, man. I even made sure to research. I didn't research Jesus as much as I could have, but with Satan, something interesting I learned is that Satan isn't really in the Bible.
Huh.
Lucifer is mentioned
a
bit, and the concept of a devil is mentioned to a degree.
Oh, for sure.
But this concept that we have in pop culture of Satan is similar to the way that we have this concept of Santa Claus in pop culture, where it's not necessarily related to any particular source material. It's just evolved through, I don't know, a common imagination, if you will.
Sure.
So there's no specifications for Satan that he has to be this red dude with horns and a tail. And
Yeah. You know, that's interesting.
And what's interesting about my collaborator, Daniel, is that even though he's from the Netherlands, he's, you know, born and raised and still lives in Europe, he was raised within the evangelical Christian faith.
Oh, wow.
You know, which is traditionally considered to be an American thing.
Yeah, so he doesn't think he's going to hell for doing this book?
Well, you'd have to ask him that specifically. And when he types Jesus to me, he still spells it with a Z instead of two S's. So I think there might be a bit of a, you know, feeling within him. There might still be some things that are, to him, are sacred.
Hanging on. Yeah. That's interesting. So you didn't have any worries about stepping on religion? Like, were you raised religiously at all? Or like,
I mean, I grew up Catholic.
Yeah, me too.
But you know how it is when you're raised Catholic in America, for the most part. it's sort of like, yes, there are things you're supposed to do, but it's not like nobody's going to hassle you either way, really. It's a pretty loose type of thing.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
And
yeah.
So I hated going to church.
Sure.
You know, and I think a lot of the tenets that are really sort of heavily preached by the church are kind of silly at times.
Yeah.
But I don't have a strong religious background.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, because I went to Catholic school when I was younger I pretty much consider myself agnostic now, but, I definitely have that background, and it's just funny reading this book where I'm like, ooh, you know, it definitely is like, where I'm like, ah, yeah, that was hardcore. Like, you know, it's just
we might be a little bit different though. Cause if I remember, so your father was from Europe and your mother, she was from, I want to say, did you say South America?
Yeah, South America. Yeah.
So now, you know, South American Catholic, that's a little bit different than European American immigrant Catholic. You know what I mean? Yeah, I think it's maybe a little bit more traditional there, a little bit more faithful, if you will.
Well, my dad wasn't Catholic. I think it was Lutheran. Oh, okay. Yeah, Lutheran. Okay. And then he, like I said, he passed when I was younger. So I was raised Catholic, and it wasn't like an awful like Catholic upbringing. As a matter of fact, it was like really nice. But, you know, at one point you just sort of get to a point where you're just like, yeah, I'm kind of done with this now. There's got to be other things that are kind of more interesting, or, you know, a world out there to explore. And if I'm going to impose these limitations upon myself, I'm not really going to be able to experience all I can experience. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's interesting. So you got together with your collaborator, and did you just write like one first issue, or like, did you have four issues planned out? Like, what was your sort of plan as far as like the book goes?
Well, first off, I got very lucky in that Danielle and I, you know, we have a decent age range between us. He's going to turn 23 soon. So we have about a decade between us.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, don't get me wrong. We're both relatively close in age compared to what we could be, but we're also both relatively young. So, you know, 10 years apart at our ages is a pretty big deal, especially for him.
Yeah.
But I got lucky in the sense that we just sort of understood what each other wanted to do.
Yeah.
We were both kind of riffing on a lot of the same sort of exploitation film vibes and stuff like that. And that's kind of what led to us just trying out the first five pages of the story together. And if you just read five pages, they almost are like a trailer for an exploitation film.
Yeah.
From the 70s, or a grindhouse film in a way. And the funny thing about it is they're also very trailer-like, because the rest of the book isn't even really like the first five pages. You know, it's got Maria in her shredded nun outfit, tied up in bondage and stuff, you know. But she's actually a very strong-willed and physically overpowering character. She's not the type to really be captured, but that's part of her character arc, you know, if you will. And so we wanted to mess with people, but we also wanted to kind of test each other out. So we did the first five pages of the story together, and we said, let's see how these five pages go. Cause the two of us had made enough comics he's been making comics for a while, even though he's very young.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah. He was first published at the age of 10.
Actually. Oh, wow. That's amazing.
And I know, it's incredible. And so we were like, we need to make sure this collaboration can work before we can even worry about what the full story is going to be like.
Yeah.
So we took the premise and we're like, let's have fun with it. We'll make five pages. If we like the collaboration, we'll do more. If we don't, then we got five pages and there's no hard feelings, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So we enjoyed it a lot and we decided to develop the full story together. So I said, let's talk on Skype and let's plot this together. Let's build this up. Let's, you know, put both of ourselves into this. And we kind of built it from there, I guess you could say. And we plotted the whole thing, but we didn't plot the end very tightly. So I guess you could say we didn't – it was designed to be a graphic novel.
Oh, okay. So you were going to have it not be single issues. You wanted it to be like one continuous story.
Well, you know, the interesting thing about the comic book market – is that even just in a few years, it's changed a lot.
Yeah.
And in around 2010 to the early 2010s, if you will, it wasn't totally clear how sustainable the single issue stuff was going to be. I mean,
yeah,
Marvel and DC were still struggling, and it wasn't until Avengers really hit, I don't think, and the sale of Marvel to Disney and a few other factors coming into play, and the New 52, actually, if you will, which was what, the spring, the fall of 2011?
Something like that. I don't remember.
Sure it was. That they really realized, okay, no, we've had a rebirth of the direct market, and we can sell single issues, yada, yada, so on. So Daniel and I, not being involved in the business at the time when we were working on this book in 2013, we were like, well, what we've seen in the past few years is that, you know, it's really trending towards graphic novels and collected editions. So let's hedge our bets and let's worry about the collected edition. And if we have to split it apart, we'll split it apart.
Gotcha.
So I wrote it in a series of 12 chapters and I would hand them off to him and he would draw it. You know, okay. we plotted everything together, but then I would take that plot and I'd turn it into pages and I would surprise him. I still do. Where, you know, I'd slip some stuff in there that maybe we didn't discuss. Some stuff where he's reading the script and he's like, how am I going to draw that? Or what the fuck is this line of dialogue? Like, this is some sick shit. You
yeah.
know? And he does that to me too when he shares his pages with me. So it's very much like we're involved in the process. You know what I mean?
Gotcha. So did you finish the whole collection, and like, this wasn't going to be a self-published thing. You were going to go out and pitch it, right?
Or... It was designed to be given away. We knew the way that this business works, which is it's tough to make money off your first two projects because there's not a ton of money in comics necessarily when you're getting started. So we made the full book in black and white. There was no color.
Okay.
And we pitched it. We said, we've got a completed graphic novel if you want it. And that was it. And Action Lab was just the company that emailed us back.
Oh, so you sent it out via email?
Yes.
Oh.
We may have done a few snail mail pitches, but the majority of them were email pitches, yeah.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. And so you submitted to Action Lab and they were just like, all right, let's go with it?
Yeah, it was actually 3 months after we submitted. We didn't hear a word from them.
Yeah.
And we hadn't found a publisher yet.
Yeah.
And 3 months later, they emailed us back and they were like, is this book still available? And we're like, yeah.
Yeah. That's funny. Did you go to conventions with it at all? Like, did you get any printed up? Oh, okay.
I did. I made mini comics out of it. Just a few.
Oh, okay.
I gave one to Boom. I gave one to Oni. I gave one to a couple of art comics publishers, Secret Acres, and I forget the other one. I gave one to everybody that I could. Not the mini comics necessarily, but a copy of the pitch.
Yeah. And what
it was in front of a lot of companies.
What, did you get any feedback from people than Action Lab? No.
Not really. No. A few of them were kind and got back to us. Secret Acres, Chris from Secret Acres replied, and he was like, I think it's Chris Fitzer or Pfizer. I don't know how to say his name. Or not Secret, no, he's Ad House Books.
Okay.
I take that back. Not Secret Acres, Ad House. And Chris from Ad House got back to us and he was like, this isn't right for me. Thank you. and we heard from a guy who's got a publisher they're starting to do more stuff now, which is really cool. Z2 Comics, Josh Frankel, who runs that. And he was like, it's a little controversial for me at the moment.
Oh, really?
he was like, thank you for pitching, you know?
Oh, gotcha.
But other than that, I think we, you know, Archaea got back to us and said, no, thank you.
Yeah.
But other than that, just no response.
Huh. And so when Action Lab got back to you, what did they say? Or what was your, like, were they like, they said, oh, is this book still available? Like, we love it. Or like,
that was pretty much exactly what they said.
Oh, really? Great.
Yeah.
So I would imagine.
And they said this, we'd like it to be colored. Do you guys need to find a colorist or what?
Yeah.
And I was like, I really believe in Daniel's art. And I was like, well, Daniel can color it. Definitely. But they hadn't seen his colored work.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so they were like, okay, well, you color a few pages of it. Pending on how that comes out, we'll see if we think you need a colorist. If we think you need a colorist, then we're going to ask you to color it. And then we'll let you know if we're going to take it.
Gotcha.
Daniel did a few pages. They really felt that his colors took the art up to another notch, which I agree completely. I mean, it's night and day looking at the black and white art and his colored art. He's a cool colorist.
Yeah.
And And then they were like, yeah, definitely, let's do this. And they sent us the contract.
That's great. That's awesome. And so at this point, you did four issues of Holy Fuck. And what was the reaction like to the first series? I mean, obviously there's a sequel, right? So you must have done decently at least, right?
You know, it's funny. We got when the order numbers for the first issue came in, Jason Martin, the publisher of Action Lab Danger Zone, the mature readers imprint at the company, he was like, "So, sequel?"
Oh, really?
Yeah. And we were like, "Yeah, we got some ideas." And so I
And
sent him a pitch and he was like, "You guys don't need the pitch."
oh, really?
He's like, "You already got a green light. Just go make it."
Oh, that's
I don't
fantastic.
know if I should say this, but I don't even know that I don't, let me say it like this. Jason, he received pitch materials from me, but I don't, he didn't say, do this, do that, yada, yada. He was just like, just go make it. I don't know how much of the pitch he read or not. He never communicated it, but he was just like, you guys, you already got the green light. Just make the sequel.
Oh,
So
wow.
we were like another four issues. He was like, yeah, just do exactly what you did and we'll see.
That's great. So
Yeah, it was nice.
how did that feel to you when you got the word back that it was just like,
You know, we got the word back before the book was even in stores.
oh, really? Oh,
Well,
because of
so
the
we had
order
our order
numbers.
numbers in by early December, I want to say, of 2014, maybe even, yeah, I think it was early, I want to say that was it, early December. It could have been early November. I don't fucking remember. But maybe it was November. I think it might have been November, actually. Anyway, point is, we felt thankful that Action Lab wanted to continue with us and do more of the story. But we were also trepidatious because the book was not in chops. We didn't know what readers felt about this story. We had one or two reviews based upon a digital comic because the book was on Comixology around that time. But that was about it. So we had very limited reaction from people. We had never had a book in the direct market before. We didn't know what to expect. We were like, are we going to make the sequel and people are going to hate? Holy fuck, because you know how the direct market works. This was retailers who decided to order enough to get us a green light, not readers.
Not readers, yeah.
Yeah.
And so
So.
the I would assume that when the rollout came, you were getting good reviews, you were like people were liking the book.
It was mixed. I mean, a lot of our early reviews were extremely positive, and overall, I think there's this cool site called Comic Book Roundup that goes around and it scours the web for reviews that gave
Oh,
your book a number rating. And so I think the first issue of Holy Fuck is at like 7.5 or something like that.
Oh, that's pretty
It's pretty
solid.
good. But we had our fair share of you know, if you will, like 5 out of 10s or you know, 2.5 stars or whatever.
2.5.
Yeah,
That's
well, two and a half
ridiculous.
out of five, you know.
That's ridiculous.
We had, you know, Fangoria was lukewarm on it. I want to say,
Fangoria, but they're not like they're
I
like a
know.
horror mag.
Hey, I don't know. They reviewed it. Well, we had a very odd placement. Our issue came out a week after the Charlie Hebdo
Oh,
shootings.
really?
So I think that because of that, we were sort of the primary religious satire in the
Oh,
comic book market at that time. So maybe we got a little bit, you know, I don't know. I think that people felt like they had something they could say about religious satire in comics at that time because of that. So maybe that's why some places that may have not traditionally looked at the book looked at it.
Gotcha. Oh, that's interesting. That's really interesting. So you do the first series and now you're on to the sequel. Do you want to, well, so far only the first issue's come out, but by the time this comes out, go out and get the book because it'll be in shops or it will
Yes,
be there
please do.
soon.
If you can find it, it's not like it's in every store.
Well, go talk to your comics retailer,
That's right.
but obviously, I mean, not to spoil the first series, but Jesus and the devil and Maria were somewhat successful in saving the world, right?
I think you can say spoiler alert, they won. It doesn't ruin the story to
No,
say
it
that they
doesn't
won.
ruin the story, but why don't you go into what the new series is about? Because
Sure.
this is I've only read the first two issues so far.
Okay.
That, and it, like, when I read the first issue, first of all, you've got full frontal Jesus nudity.
Yes.
He's a very gifted man.
Yes. he is the Messiah.
Yeah.
Come on.
When I opened that page, I was like, whoa. I was like, whoa, put that away. Yeah, why don't you talk about the plot? Because this was definitely one of the ones where I was like, did he really just do that? So why don't you talk a little bit about what the first issue is?
Thank you for your kind words.
Yeah,
The idea is they're living happily ever after. You know, so they, like I said, spoiler alert, they won. So Jesus, Satan, and Maria, they settle down together in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Jesus and Satan get a house. They're you know, having a fantastic, domesticated, loving life together.
Yeah.
Maria is running a homeless shelter in L.A.
Yeah.
And, you know, she is – it's not – you'll learn – well, you'll know because you read issue two. But it's not really – we don't – I always knew where Maria was from.
Uh-huh.
And if you go back and you read Holy Fuck, there are hints to it because she uses very specific Argentinian swear words.
Yeah.
But if you aren't familiar with those swears, then you're not going to know she's from Argentina. But she left her convent in Argentina, and she's not a nun now, but she's still a faithful person.
Yeah.
And so she's running this homeless shelter, and that's like her new way of giving back, if you will, you know,
yeah.
of being in touch with that spirit. And everything is really going perfect for them.
Yeah.
But on the flip side, Hercules comes back to Mount Olympus to find that his family is gone. Where the hell are they?
Yeah.
And he's in a reverse situation. He's not living happily ever after. He's living in his nightmare.
Yeah.
And he's just really upset. And when word gets to him of I think I can say it. It's not like that big of a deal. Satan's pregnant with Jesus' child.
Oh, no. Yeah.
And when Hercules finds this out, he's like, wait, you know, and Hercules, a lot of people haven't realized this. In fact, I've actually been surprised to find that even people who reviewed our original series that are now reviewing Holy Fucked didn't realize that we slipped a little sneaky thing in there, which is that in our first issue of Holy Fucked, it says that Jesus killed Zeus. That's what Hercules thinks.
Yeah.
Hercules believes Jesus killed Zeus. If you've read Holy Fuck, you know that it was a little bit different. I don't want to say what happened, but that wasn't quite the way things went down.
Yeah.
but the point is, that's what Hercules believes. And his goal is, he's saying, wait, Jesus is about to start a family and he just took away my entire family?
Yeah.
No, I want revenge.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's his plan, is to come down to Earth, leave Mount Olympus, come down to Earth and fuck shit up for Jesus. And that's the premise behind Holy Fucked.
Yeah, it's great. It's really great because I remember reading the first issue and just being like, wow, you really just totally went in a place that I didn't really expect you to go as far as like the relationship between Jesus and Satan. Like,
yeah.
I mean, you know, there were hints that they knew each other or whatever, but it definitely makes a jump in their relationship and
yes.
cements it and bonds it. And it's like, okay, he's either completely brilliant or completely crazy at this point. What have the responses been to that first issue? Because it came out.
It's been good.
Yeah.
You know, it's weird. We're fortunate in that we're in a position where, you know, Action Lab is a growing publisher, but it's not in every shop and it's not making it onto every comic book website. We're not getting reviewed on Comic Book Resources or Newsarama. You know what I mean?
Ah, that's weird. Why not?
We're not. Well, first off, those sites primarily review either superhero books or books from, if you will, the, you know, I don't know if you want to say the big six or whatever, but it's like, you know, Marvel, DC, IDW, Image, Dark Horse, and Boom. Those are pretty much the only books that get reviewed on those sites, you know?
Really? Oh,
yeah.
Interesting.
And so we've got smaller sites checking us out. And when you're not getting paid for that review or you're not writing for a large fan base, you're doing it because you're passionate about writing a review. So you want to spend your time reviewing books you care about. You know what I mean? And so because of that combined effect, we're fortunate in a lot of the feedback we get being very positive, I think, because I don't know. It's people who want to read it and talk about it that are reading and talking about it.
Yeah.
So I can't say if anybody really dislikes it. But it's been pretty good. And I think people have been pleasantly surprised that it's, and the thing which some reviewers have latched onto, which means a lot to me, is they recognize that it's not, we're not trying to mock anybody here. It's actually, you know, it's kind of like a love story a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but the thing that keeps popping into my mind, being sort of the paranoid type, is like, are you ready for the moment where it may or may not come, where there comes a religious crazy who is like, this book is extremely offensive and la 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 la. Like, there's no concerns about like that at all, like in the back of your head? Or are you just
I guess it could happen, but I don't know. I mean, I would hope if that opportunity comes up, we could have a conversation together.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or you could just sell more books.
But it's, you know, holy fuck isn't, yeah, right. Holy fuck isn't, these books are not meant to be, these aren't made to be offensive.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying like, you know, screw you and screw your religion. My thing is like, these are really pop culture characters at this point, because people going to church every week aren't really following the teachings of Jesus.
Yeah, you know? Sure.
Like, come on, let's get real. Like, if you were following the teachings of Jesus, you'd probably be like, who's like a good example? I don't know. You'd just be like
Mother Teresa,
accepting. Yeah, you'd be like Mother Teresa. And how many people like that are there? Not too many. You'd be the most accepting, open person. You know, the Pope is nowadays is embodying a lot more of those values than many religious leaders have in the past, which is he's just like, he's not going to condemn anybody. He's not going to judge anybody.
Yeah.
It's about accepting everybody. But the vast majority of people, no, I don't want to say that. That'd be a generalization. A lot of people who are fundamentalist Christian do not. Yeah. They believe that there are certain tenets which they have to follow, which are about ostracizing people rather than accepting people.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah.
And,
no,
and so I don't know. It could happen. But I also think that if they had even flipped through or read the book, they would be like, oh, that's not actually what this is about. This isn't making fun of my God. This is about, it's more social commentary on how, you know, human culture interacts with the idea of gods.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Maybe, I don't know. That's my lofty view of it.
Well, I think it's a, you know, it's a very good view. I just think that, you know, you've definitely got a certain segment of society or people who, you know, they're going to pick on what they want to, you know, not to, what's her face, Taylor Swift, to like quote her, but you know, the hater's going to hate, right? So, I mean, it's like, you're definitely, you never know when that person's going to come across. And I just wondered if that had ever been a consideration, because there's definitely a part of me who, you know, being the sort of a Woody Allen nebbishy type a little bit, you know, is like, oh my God, are they going to come get us? Like, are they going to come burn my house down or so? You know what I mean? But that's great. I mean, again, that is one of the things that I, you know, I admire about you, which is like, you know what? I'm just going to tell the story, you know, that I want to tell. And, you know, so is there going to be a Holy Fuck 3?
Not right now.
Not right now.
I wish I could say that our sales were gangbusters on Holy Fucked to warrant it, or to have us, you know, get another blind green light, but they're not like that.
Oh, and no.
They've been more moderate, more average for the company and the size of our book, if you will.
Gotcha.
Our first series maybe did a bit, it maybe overperformed a bit, let's say.
Oh.
Yeah, and again, this is based upon retailer expectations. We're, from what I understand, we're close to being out of, you know, Diamond is almost, well, I don't want to say almost, but we only got a couple hundred in stock left with Diamond.
Oh, wow.
Of our first issue. So we might actually end up, you know, selling out or whatever at some point.
That's
But basically what I'm getting at is that, you know, we did fine with this, but not to the point where Daniel and I feel like the sales are calling us back to do a third one. And Daniel has some things he'd like to do, and I have some things, maybe less enthusiastically so, that if we did do a third one, I'd want to see in there. But there's nothing planned right now. We've already moved on to our next book.
Oh, really? Oh, so
yeah,
you've got another book planned?
He's about halfway through drawing it.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah. Okay. Another, something with Action Lab, or just to pitch to other?
We don't have a publisher lockdown yet. We've talked to them a little bit, but our vision didn't line up with theirs at the time.
Okay.
And our vision has changed a lot since then. So we'll see what happens when that time comes.
Oh, okay.
For us to share it with them again. But we just decided to start making it. We said, you know what, the recipe was good with Holy Fuck. Let's see if we can do it even better this time with our new story.
Great.
And so we'll just make the full thing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and don't get me wrong, I'm reaching out to publishers right now as it is too.
Sure, sure,
but,
sure.
But we're just going to keep making the book and then we'll figure out what to do with it once it's done.
Cool. And is this another sort of mature readers or a little bit more mainstream? It is. Oh, okay.
It's mature.
Great.
It's mature. Yeah. And it's a superhero book. So it's,
oh, okay.
It's both more mainstream and mature readers.
Gotcha. 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 Oh, great. That's great, man. That's terrific. So thanks. Where can people find you and where can people, if they want to look up more information about you or Holy Fuck or anything like that, where should they go?
You know, something interesting I learned is that Googling a word with an asterisk in the middle of it doesn't always yield the best results. It kind of messes with search engines.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
So if you want to look up Holy Fuck, put it in quotes. That's the best way to get accurate results through Google.
Oh, wow. Oh, okay.
But or you can just type my name in, just Google Nick Marino Comics.
Oh, okay. You don't have like a website yet or?
Yeah, I do. I'm at nickmarino.net.
Well, there you go.
And you can go there. It has links to everything. I mean, I update it constantly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's got links to all my old, it's got a bunch of my old work for free as PDFs on the website.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, my God. Cool. Pretty much everything I've made from high school until now, for the most part, is free on there.
Oh, I want to check that out. That's
yeah,
awesome.
Yeah. We got a ton. I have a ton of stuff up there with some with collaborators, some without.
Oh, cool, man.
Awesome. And so, yeah, you can find me there. But also, it's just like, how many people type a URL in nowadays, really? Doesn't everybody just Google everything?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you can find me on all the social networks.
Yeah, yeah. Know?
My name's really common, but I think if you type in comics after it, you'll find me.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, cool. Well, you know, thanks for coming on, you know,
Part-Time
Fanboy. It's great talking to you. It was great hanging out with you at Long Beach.
I had a great time too.
You know, and whenever you want to, you know, come on again and talk about like your next project or just whatever, you know, give me a shout.
Maybe the next time we can reverse it. And when you've got everything locked down with Baby Badass, I can ask you a shitload of questions about it.
Yeah, well, I think Dave might be the one you want to interview more.
Well, maybe we'll both of you then.
Yeah, we'll
no,
do both.
I look forward. I mean, you and I have spoken about it together, but
yeah,
it's a cool journey that you're on with it right now, and I look forward to finding out even more about it when the time's come for everybody to read it.
Cool. Well, thank you for that. And you know, as always, I wish you the best of luck. And
you know,
we're both in California, so we got to hang out. So everyone needs to.
Are you going to Kamikaze?
I do not know yet. It's on Halloween weekend.
So you don't have a table.
I don't have a table. We don't have anything like that. I think we're going to.
But you might swing by.
Yeah, no, I think. Do you have a table? Are you going to?
I do. You're going
to Kamikaze?
I think I get two badges too. So if you want to come through for a day, I should have an extra badge.
Oh, cool. All right. Yeah, maybe.
I assume I get two badges. I don't know for sure.
Well,
isn't that pretty much when you get a table? I got an Artist Alley table.
Yeah. I think you get like something like two.
Yeah, but, yeah. So we'll talk about it.
Yeah, it's just that weekend is Halloween weekend.
I know, and the middle of the weekend is Halloween too.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the sort of thing where it's like, sorry, that's all about my kid. You know what I mean? It's like decorating the house, having a little Halloween party. Eight,
my bad, sorry.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But
eight is like prime Halloween time though.
Yeah, yeah. Well, in any case, thank you, Nick Marino, for coming on Part-Time Fanboy.
Thanks, Christian.
And everyone needs to go check out his book, Holy Fucked, which will be, the second issue will be out when this podcast debuts. You can get Holy Fuck in trades, the original series, right? Can they get him on Amazon?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So definitely check those out. And mine.
It's all over. Anywhere you get comics, you can get it. Although some people might have to ask their comic shop to order it for them.
Sure.
But, you know, and it's on Comixology too.
Oh, okay, great.
It's everywhere.
It's easy to find. Awesome.
It is.
Well, I'm Christian Horn. This is Part-Time Fanboy. Thank you for listening, and hopefully we'll be back next week with another episode. Thanks for doing this, Nick.
Thank you.
I really appreciate it. Bye.
Part-Time Fanboy. Our time.